Well, hello everybody and welcome to the latest podcast, this one being for October 2017. And since the last time that I spoke to you a month ago, I've moved house. Now, I don't know whether any of you listeners have moved house in recent times, but they always say, don't they, that it's one of the most stressful things that you can do in your life. And I can certainly attest to that. The actual process of trying to move has been ongoing now for about a year. And the last few months, certainly back from about June onwards, it looked like we were about to move. And then it all kept falling through, or there were endless sort of administrative delays and delays of other sort. And this produced a very difficult time, particularly when you're trying to run a business. I mean, it's bad enough, I think, when you're trying to move just because it's your domestic place that you live and just trying to get all your family and all your stuff from one place to another. But when you're trying to run a business and keep that business functioning when you work from home as I do, then it throws into the mix a whole new range of difficulties. If you don't know exactly when you're going to move, it makes all your planning very difficult to do. And certainly for the last 2 or 3 months, I felt very much up in the air about when I could do things and where I would be when I needed to do them. So it's been a very difficult time. But finally, on the 7th of September, we did move. And of course, it was actually a very big move in the sense of the amount of stuff that we had was huge. And for the last 10 years, we've actually been sharing our accommodation with my elderly mother-in-law and sister-in-law. They have an annex on our house, so we needed to find another house that could also accommodate them, which fortunately we were able to do, and a house that my wife and I truly love as well. So that was great. But of course, it meant you're essentially moving two families, but not just two families. You're also moving, in a sense, two businesses, Mark Leverage Magic and Magic Scene Magazine as well. Just the number of magazines that I store at home, ready for customers hopefully one day to buy, a number that goes up, of course, every time a new issue appears. Even though I don't store all of them, I have quite a percentage of them. And so the physical amount of room that it takes is surprising. And I think we were in our last house for 21 years. And I think when you're in a place for a long time, you kind of squirrel things away, don't you? You put things a little bit here and a little bit there. And you almost don't notice how much clutter and other stuff you're keeping. Well, in the same way that we did that with our domestic side, also with the business side, the same thing applies. Now, as you know, from last April, I only sell my products via download. But I still had some bits and pieces left from when I was selling physical products. And these are no longer any use to me. Bits and pieces that I would have originally made up into tricks are now not really any longer of much use to me. And yet I, rather than throw them away, I found myself putting them into the removal van, or letting the guys do it, putting them into the removal van and bringing them to the new place. Goodness knows why. I have no idea why. But for some reason, it's kind of too soon for me to throw them away completely. So there was a huge amount of stuff that we have needed to accommodate in our new premises. And it has a big double garage, which is just as well, because it's a temporary storage place until we can find the right place to put everything. But it's very difficult to concentrate on doing all the necessary things you do when you move house, including, of course, grappling with utilities such as BT, bless the cotton socks, so easy to deal with, aren't they? And Sky and various other people like this, who you have to make endless appointments with, and you have people coming to the house and setting stuff up, and certain things don't work. We were 10 days without broadband, for instance, which for an internet business like mine is a bit tricky. So there's all sorts of things that need to gradually sort of settle down, if you like. And it's only now, when we're sort of about 3 weeks or so after the move, that things are beginning to get back to some sort of normality. So things like all my website updates, the next issue of Magic Scene, which will be out at the end of October, the November issue, all these things I've been trying to do around this move. So if there's any little inaccuracies that appear, I hope you'll forgive me, because my mind may well be not entirely on the magic job, but actually in the back of my mind is I really need to unpack those 12 boxes, because I'm sure there's some stuff in those 12 boxes that I really need. Yes, I don't intend to move for a very long time after this one, I can tell you. Now, right from when I went pro back in 1981, when I do kid shows, I have not just done magic. I've never done Punch and Judy or balloons, but I had to have something else as well as just a magic show. And I went into the game side of things, and my magic parties have been very successful over the years, and I've done many thousands of them, and I've enjoyed doing them. They are good fun to do. But one of the things about doing the games section is that because you're doing games, the inevitable question comes up, well, what are you going to give the children who win games? What are you going to give them? Are you going to supply the prizes? And my feeling was that I would. I have always provided the prizes. But of course, providing the prizes does, to a certain extent, depending on the quality of the prizes themselves, it does give you an extra cost. And so the question, especially if it's a big party and you're giving away a lot of prizes, it brings up the question of, well, should I include the provision of prizes in the price that I charge for the show altogether? Or should I give a lower price for the show and say, oh, by the way, I can also provide prizes and it will cost you this much extra, and sell it as an add-on? It's a bit like with balloons. People who do balloons, some people will provide a few balloons for during the show, if you like, and so that some of the children get a balloon animal. But sometimes they'll say, well, look, if you like, as a sort of value-added extra, if you pay me this amount of extra money, I will come with balloons so that every child can actually go away with a nice balloon model. Now, there are two ways, therefore, to approach this, how you fund this. One is to have a lower fee and charge an extra, and some people will take it and some people won't. The other is to include it in the price. I've always included the cost of the prizes within my show price, because I've always felt that there are a lot of people who don't very much like extras. They don't like being upsold, or as they would say it, upsold, after they've been hooked in perhaps by a low price, then being upsold with something that they then have to make a decision about and may possibly feel bad about saying no if they really don't want to afford it. I know for some people, getting a low show fee is very important, because if they are competing with their shows with other people purely on price and not on who they are or the quality of what they do, but just basically going for a headline price, then to include prizes where it sticks the fee up might cut them out of a certain number of shows that they would otherwise get. And so those people may say, well, okay, I'm going to keep the price of my show low so that people are hooked in. Gosh, is that all it costs? Oh, by the way, I can provide this as extra, balloons as extra if you want to pay for it, a party bag for the children to take, every child to take home. I can supply that for £4 a head or whatever, and so on, and do all the value added afterwards. Now, I don't particularly like it. For instance, if I go on a flight somewhere and the headline price for the flight is low, but when you actually come to the booking, you discover that there are a multitude of extras which really and truly aren't extras, but they like to, like, for instance, Ryanair now charging, I believe, for hand luggage. Not just hold luggage, but hand luggage as well. All these little extras that stick the price up, and you kind of feel slightly cheated, I think, when you have all these extra things to pay. So I've always felt that it's better to include the price. And if that puts the price of your show up a bit, then that shows the value of letting people know what you do and what you're going to supply before you tell them the price. Because then if your price is higher than somebody else, that they will realise, well, the reason perhaps it's high is because you're getting X, Y and Z provided as part of the cost and they're not all added extras. So that's just my way of feeling about it. What do you do? Do you have extra things that you add on to make extra money? Or do you like to include it? I think personally, as I say, I think including it is the better way to go, but I'm sure there are many people who think the opposite. Stuart Bowie, Paul Prager and Chris Payne are my three closest friends in magic. We've all known each other since the 1970s, when we were all members as young men of the Bristol Society of Magic. And although I've long since moved away from Bristol, moving down to Exeter in 1988 originally, and Stuart has moved more latterly up to Cumbria, we still all regularly keep in contact. And the three guys are regular contributors to Magic Scene because they're part of the review team and they do a lot of the product reviews that we feature in each issue. We've all got slightly different approaches to magic, but we're all interested in basically the same sort of things, stand-up magic and close-up magic generally, strolling magic. And we've over the years, we've had so many sessions and interesting discussions, either between couples, if you like, between two at a time, or all together. And when Stuart moved up to Cumbria, we decided that we would all get together once a year on a regular basis in September in order to spend two or three days immersing ourselves in magic chat and performance and critique, really. And we've obviously last month, we did it again. We sort of dubbed ourselves the Cumbrian Conjurers Collective, bit of a tongue-in-cheek name, the CCC, and we've done it for the last three or four years, and it's been great because it gives us an opportunity to forget the rest of the world and for two or three days, as I say, to concentrate on chatting in great depth about all aspects of magic. And it is such fun when you have people whose opinion you value and whose opinion indeed you trust. And where none of us have an axe to grind in putting anybody else down or scoring points in any way whatsoever. It's fantastic because you can take ideas or things that you're thinking of doing and you could present it to the other members of the group. And you know that they will give you a truly honest opinion and also an opinion that, as I say, because they have no axe to grind, doesn't set out to hurt you, only to help you. The benefits of having a group like this are huge, I think, to anybody who likes to think about the magic that they do and who enjoys discussing it. I think the problem with magic clubs is that there's often not enough time during meetings to have in-depth discussions with people. You have snatch conversations, but there's never really, unless perhaps the evening that the club is holding invites a more detailed approach to the magic that you're doing. But generally speaking, there are too many people who you don't know well enough, and there are too many perhaps egos jostling for positions in some ways in magic clubs. When you're in a bigger group, the dynamic is just not the same as when you're in a small, trusted group. And that's certainly what we find. And it was really nice because one of the members of the CCC, he had a routine which he showed us, which he'd only done a couple of times. But there were certain aspects of it that he wasn't particularly happy with, and he showed it to us and we all gave various ideas and alternative presentation, alternative handlings and ideas, which he took on board. And since we've come back, he's written to me and told me that he took various of the suggestions that were made, incorporated them into the trick, went out and did it. And he said how much it had improved it, and how happy he was now with the routine itself. And I thought, isn't that brilliant? If we hadn't got together, that wouldn't have happened for him. And right, it wouldn't be the end of the world, but it's so nice when you think that something like that, a friendship like that, can help in a practical way as well as in just having fun. So I really value the friendship that I have with these guys, and our regular meetings are something I really, really look forward to. Over the years, I've been to a huge number of lectures. And not just magic lectures. I mean, when I was a student, I went to endless. I did a German degree, so I went to loads of lectures on German. And I've been to a lot of business presentations as well in the last few years. And there's one thing that I've noticed that marks out the difference between a good presenter and a poor presenter. And that is the use of eye contact. And I think it's something that is so important because it's relevant to us as performers as well as to people presenting lectures. The thing about eye contact is that I've seen people who have, because of nerves or just because they think it's the right thing to do, there are some people who don't make any eye contact at all. They may talk, they may have their head up and they may talk to the group, but for some reason that I've never quite understood, they either look at the same part of the room all the time, or they kind of look over the heads of the people sitting there as if they're trying to look to the back. I mean, something wrong with looking, if it's a big group, looking at the people at the back, but not only at the people at the back, because otherwise everybody else thinks, well, hello, we're here too, and they feel ignored. And I think it's a very easy for anybody who's doing a talk to get people to switch off and to stop paying attention, simply not because what they're saying is not of interest perhaps, but simply because they just don't feel involved. Well, I feel this is very true, particularly of close-up, but indeed of cabaret to a certain extent too, even stage work. But certainly in close-up, when you approach a group, let's say it's a group of people, so about 10 people, quite a large group, the temptation might be to talk to the people who are closest to you on either side of you. If you're standing at a table side, the people on the left and people on the right. And ignoring the people on the far side of the table, you direct your comments and you get the people who are close to you only to be the ones who get involved taking cards, examining things or whatever. Now, the people on the far side of the table think, oh, are we not supposed to be watching this? Or if they do watch it, they have a certain disconnect from what you're doing. Whereas if you look up and you address some of your comments right across to them, or you walk around the table so that you can be close to them to borrow something or to get them to shuffle a pack of cards, this feeling involved makes your whole performance much more memorable. And certainly the eye contact bit, I try if I possibly can to look every single person in a group in the eye on more than one occasion. And it's interesting the effect that this has, because I'm sure the people think that I am talking all the time just to them, because I appear to be looking at them all the time. And I think this is very powerful. Sometimes people say when you're doing walkabout, everybody's standing up, it's very easy for people to just drift away. The people who are on the edges of your group, and you might start with a group of, say, 8 people sort of gathered around and you're doing some magic. Well, if you only make eye contact with the 2 or 3 people who are standing directly in front of you, the people at the edges or the people perhaps in a second row behind the people in the front that you appear to be talking to only might think, well, I'm not really interested in this, and just wander away. And you end up with an audience of 4, which is not a very nice feeling if you see people wandering away. And yet, by using good eye contact, you may well have hooked them in. As I say, ideally, it's great if you can get them directly involved. Sometimes you can't do that if it's a very big table, for instance, and the tricks that you're doing don't allow you to move around to the other side of the table for any reason. Then it may be that eye contact and what you say is the only thing that's going to hold people. Yes, they can see what you're doing, but I think giving them that direct eye contact will make them feel that you're interested in them. And if you're interested in them, then hopefully they will be interested in you and what you're doing. And that's why I think eye contact is so vital to a good performance. Over the past year or so, I've mentioned on a couple of occasions in the podcast the online agency called Bark. And there's been quite a bit of discussion amongst magicians about Bark and about whether their model for bringing potential clients in an automated way through to us performers is a good idea. I'm not a fan of Bark, I must admit. I've not had any success with it. And I've been discussing with various people whether they've had success, and it seems to vary hugely from one person to another. Some people seem to get a lot of work, others like me seem to get virtually none. And the way that Bark have gradually increased the price of their units, if you like, in order for you to contact the potential bookers, has made it a less and less attractive option, I feel. Measure my sort of feelings then when recently I found myself getting involved with another similar organisation called Add to Event. It was quite clever, actually, how they hooked me in the first place, I thought, because I received an email that looked relatively personal, saying that they had somebody who was looking for a magician that did exactly what I did in my area, and wondered whether there was absolutely no charge, whether I would like the contact so that I could get in contact with them to see if I could get the booking. And I thought, well, I'm not quite sure what the catch is here. It's free. Why not? When you then click through to the website, it says, well, we're going to give you the information in a second, but just before we do that, we'd like to get a few details about you for the database. So then they then take all your details. They kind of lock you into ending up with something on their website that represents you. Nothing wrong with that. It wasn't underhanded. It was quite clear that's what they were doing. But it was kind of. I thought it was kind of clever because they'd offered the bait was the free show, of course, and then they, in the process of giving me the free show, they made sure, very sensible in my view, that they got all my contact details and that I ended up with a section on their website where they could advertise me as one of their suppliers. So they gave me the details, and my initial reaction was, I wonder whether this is a real show or not. I wonder whether this is just something that is set up and I'll, in order just to get my harvest, my details, because they don't actually, it could be a bogus one. And I go through all the rigmarole of putting together a quote and getting it sent through them, and then it's not a real one, and they just go, oh no, sorry, I didn't want to book you. However, not the case, because I did put it through, I got the show, and I went and I did it. As soon as I got onto their database, I started to get fairly regular inquiries. And the thing that I noticed about them was that they were all very targeted and very relevant to what I do. And this is something that I felt Bark really didn't achieve. Even though you can say, you know, what type of show it is, what type of magician you are, and therefore what type of show you want, I felt that the way that the software worked with Bark, it used to send you things that just weren't relevant. Anyway, not long after I'd joined Add to Event, you then get a call, a personal call from a real person who discusses about you and what you do and fills in some more details and makes you feel kind of valued and asks us any questions. And I said to the girl who rang me, I said, I haven't heard of you before, although I know you've been around for a while, but I haven't heard of you before. I've been with trying to do some business with Bark, don't really like it. What is the difference between you and Bark? And she said, well, the difference is that we are performance only organization. We're not trying to do lots of other things as well, so we're targeted to performers only. And there were one or two other little things that she said. And one of the things that I found, one of the reasons why I think for me anyway Bark doesn't work, is because it insists on putting prices down, suggested prices that the booker can look at to give them supposedly an idea of the type of quote they might get. And these price ranges are, quite frankly, most of the time, fairly ludicrous. They don't reflect, well, they certainly can't reflect accurately. I mean, they give a fairly broad range, but that doesn't really tell you anything. But it's from one performer to another, it could be wildly wrong one way or the other. In fact, a friend of mine pointed out there was one show inquiry that he'd got. He's not a children's entertainer, but he got an inquiry for a children's show. That's the sort of thing I mean about Bark. And it gave a range. He said, you know, this is what most people might expect to pay for this show. And it gave a range of a price. This is what top end people would pay. And for a children's show, it was £1,200. And you sort of think, well, okay, what type of kid show would book out at £1,200? All right, there may be some, but 99% of the people who do kid shows, it's just ridiculous. Anyway, so Add to Event has proved to be actually much, much better. It's more targeted. The price in terms of the units seems much fairer than Bark's, and I've had a lot of success with it. And it doesn't give a suggested price for the customer. So when you present what you do, that the customer's not coming with any preconceptions, which I quite like. I would rather that. But otherwise, I think Bark's model does tend to force the price down, perhaps, whereas this particular way that Add2Event do it, it doesn't. And so I look forward to. They've certainly put a lot of inquiries my way, and I've got quite a lot of bookings out of it too. So I look forward to seeing how it pans out in the future with Add2Event. As many of you probably know, at the very core of Mark Leverage Magic these days, because I'm a download-only supplier of magic, is eClub Pro, my online magic and information resource. And eClub Pro is now in its 7th year, and it's got a huge number of pages of content, 700 in fact, that are on offer to members, covering a magnificent, I think, range of material, very wide range of material, and lots of different levels of interest and information. And it should appeal to everybody from total beginners up to full-time pros, and certainly everything in between. And I've got members all over the world who cover all of those, right from youngsters just starting out through to seasoned pros. And I like to feel that they all get something every month of value out of eClub Pro. If you've ever considered doing eClub Pro, what you can do, if you go to my website, you can take a sort of like a video tour of the pages. It lasts about 8 to 9 minutes. You'll find it on the home page on the right-hand side. You click on the computer graphic, and it'll take you on the tour, and it'll show you what's involved, how you get around the pages, and what the members see a little bit. So it'll give you an idea whether it's something that you might be interested in. It costs £10 a month to be a member, but there's no fixed subscription period, so you're not locked in. So you can give it a try for a few months, see how you get on. If you like, you can stay, and if you feel it's not for you, you can leave. But certainly doing the eClub Pro Tour might be worthwhile, a few minutes of your time, just to see what is involved with it. Years ago, I was booked by an agent to do a large event, and I had to work with another close-up magician. And we were discussing how we were going to cover the number of tables that we had to get round. And he said to me, "Oh, what I like to do," he said, "I don't like to do them in order. I don't like to do them in a specific area of the room." He said, I just dot around and go to tables, and I try to go back to. I do go up to a table. I'll do a couple of minutes, and I'll go away, and I'll come back to the table again, perhaps later if I get time, and do some more. And I like to go back to the table several times. I've never really heard anybody else who does it like that, and for me, that just wouldn't work at all. I've never liked going back to a table. I like to go up to a table or to a group, to entertain them for a few minutes, do all my best stuff, all my best lines, and then I like to say, "Thanks very much, lovely to meet you, enjoy the rest of your evening," and I like to leave and go to another group. To have to go back, it somehow just doesn't feel right for me. I can remember I used to do, I think it was for about 3 or 4 years in a row, I did a booking each year for a particular company. At a social, and it was a dinner for a select number of people, about 15 people. And I used to have to perform two or three tricks in between each course to everybody. So, in other words, I came back to the same table 3 or 4 times, and I really didn't like it at all. You'd think it wouldn't really matter, it's just like doing a show and just spreading it out a bit. It really didn't work for me. I just didn't like having to kind of start again. And after a while, when I went back to the group, I thought, "Oh dear," I didn't want them to think, "Oh no, him again. I've got to stop my conversation again and watch some more magic." And I think there is a feeling like that if you go back to a group, and there are some groups where the people are hugely enthusiastic about magic, and they are desperate to see you to do some more stuff. So I mean, if you have time to go back to a table like that, I don't see any problem with that. But doing it routinely, having to go back to some tests where, to be honest, two or three tricks, that's all they want. They don't want any more. There are other things going on in the event at the event that to take their attention. And so to have the magician constantly coming back might actually be an irritation, in the same way that if two or three magicians are working an event and they all go to the same group rather than all doing different groups, that could be, I think, a bit of an irritation too. So going back to groups, not for me, even though it seemed to work for this person. Well, that's another podcast finished. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you found some things of interest there. I hope you have a really great month, and I shall look forward to being back for another chat with you in November. Bye for now.